Hey everyone, welcome to the gallery. I'm your host, Claudia Osorio. I'm so happy you could join us for today's episode. I'm very excited to welcome our guest. But first I wanted to start off by thanking all of our listeners out there who have been incredibly encouraging and who go out of their way to support this podcast. It's very much turned into a platform for people who are doing some very exceptional things in our arts community. I'm especially grateful for the people who have taken the time to come onto the show to talk about what they're doing to revitalize the scene in Houston. Today, we welcome one of those exciting local visionaries. She's a writer, she's a director, producer, storyteller, who recently released a short film, which will be shown at several film festivals around the area and hopefully around the country. Everyone, meet Jenny Waldo. Welcome, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited you're here. So I watched Acid Test probably for the sixth time today. You sent it to me a while ago. I wasn't able to make the premiere. Right. So this is a short film that you've been working on, and it has had a very local crew, a very Houston-based crew, which is very exciting for our little community of filmmakers in the area. Is that correct?
Yes. All of our crew were Houston-based filmmakers, and most of our cast was also, if not currently living in Houston, originally from the Houston area. And so it was very, very local. And what I have found in the 10 or so years that I've lived in Houston is an incredibly rich filmmaking community. What we're kind of lacking is a lot of infrastructure and kind of a lot of basically industry-wide, kind of nationwide projects coming in here. We've got a lot of commercial work, a lot of corporate work with all the business here in Houston, but we're kind of lacking the television shows and the feature films. But there are a lot of people doing their own independent films here and web series and different things. And so you just find a really rich, capable, diverse cast of people who make films here. And so it's really exciting to kind of tap into that.
And yeah, and there's definitely that desire to make art and to create something, like you said, short films. I was actually really surprised to discover that there was a lot of commercial work in Houston. I wasn't even aware of it. And a lot of it shoots here, not just in our neighboring suburbs, but in Galveston as well. I know Kristen Massa, who was previously on the show, and she's worked with you and she's studied under you.
She's great.
Yeah, she's the one who told me about all this work that she does around here, because I didn't understand, you know, how she was finding work in Houston.
Yeah, there are some reality shows that come in. A lot of the like flip housing, HGTV projects come through, different kind of Animal Kingdom stuff, and then corporate work like Academy and HEB. I mean, all of those commercials that you see with you know, the footballers or the
local, you know, celebrities,
all that stuff. They need people to do that work. Houston apparently used to be the TV movie capital of at least U.S. production back in the 90s. So you also find a lot of really old school, like, film cinematographers here that are just, you know, incredible technicians.
Sure.
And so it's just kind of this wild, I mean, that's one of the things about Texas that's kind of so crazy. And Houston, I find specifically kind of crazy, is that you get all kinds of different people with all kinds of different backgrounds and all kinds of specialities here. And even though it's kind of known as an oil and gas town, you've just got, like, I mean, anything is possible here. And it's got that kind of entrepreneurial can-do spirit of Texas. And so it's there's a lot going on here, and hopefully it will continue to grow and connect and kind of connect to a larger community as well.
So let's backtrack a little bit, because I want to know more about you, because you're not from Houston.
No,
you're not from Houston. You're a graduate of USC's MFA in film production.
Yeah.
You write, you direct, and you produce documentary and scripted films. But on top of all of that, you also teach both documentary and fictional filmmaking at Houston Community College.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up here? Because you're originally from
Washington, D.C.
Right.
Yeah. So I grew up in the DC area and really didn't know what I wanted to do at all. And I went to college and was an English major kind of by default. And in those courses, started studying film as kind of like film theory stuff, you know, and reading a movie like you would read a book for like themes and motif and all of that stuff. And I found that really exciting. I had grown up doing a lot of art stuff. I did piano, I did dance, I did choreography. And I was a photographer. My dad, has a dark room or had a dark room growing up in our basement. And, one of my first science projects, like as a 6-year-old, was developing black and white photographs.
Oh, that's really cool.
So I grew up like doing all this photography stuff, and then did a photography club in high school. And I was just one of those kids that always had my camera and was like always taking pictures. And then I would write about it. And I was like a journaler and I was always journaling and all this stuff. I was very typical angsty teen. Sure. And when I started studying film in college, I kind of thought, oh my God, this is kind of combining a lot of things that had already been in my life in a way that I really liked. And then the other side of it that was exciting to me was kind of the business side, which a lot of people don't always talk about when they talk about art.
Sure, yeah.
Obviously, with films, with like blockbuster films, you think about the Hollywood industry and the business side of it. But for me, I was excited about this idea of, you know, the whole starving artist thing was not exciting to me. Like, I didn't want to be right. starving in a warehouse painting pictures. You know, I wanted to create something that then connected with a broader audience and that there was kind of a mechanism or a business behind, you know, trying to get that out there as like a commodity. And so all of that stuff kind of came together for me, and I went to Los Angeles and I did an internship on the Paramount lot and was like, I have found God and I will never leave sure. here. And I just loved it. And it was just really exciting. And then I moved out to graduate. 2 weeks after graduation, I moved out to Los Angeles and realized I knew nobody, didn't know what I was doing. I'd never been that far away from home. And I was kind of like about to sign a lease on an apartment I couldn't afford in a town where I knew nobody, you know.
Isn't that the typical story?
Right, exactly. Right. And I just, but for me, I was like, I remember a friend of mine talking to a friend at the time, and she was like, just stick it out. You know, it's like everybody goes through that. They get nervous. Just, you will find your way. And I was like, I don't know, you know. And at the time, I was kind of doing some research and realized that my hometown, D.C., was a fairly large production city, not so much for scripted projects, even though feature films and TV shows do kind of go through there, but with PBS based there and Discovery Channel is based there and National Geographic is based there, it's like the hub of documentary educational filmmaking.
Sure. Yeah.
And obviously with the government, there's a lot of corporate work and government industrials. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to go home and get my feet wet and figure out what I'm doing and go from there. And so that's exactly what I did. I got a job within like a couple of days. I literally opened the Yellow Pages and like went down production companies and started cold calling and got a job. And so I was home for 2 years. And during that time, I even tried to move up to New York City, which was even more of a disaster just because it's even more expensive. And thought, you know what, I need to kind of figure out what I can do. One of the things that I was really afraid of doing was just picking up a camera and making a movie. Like as much as I would do photography and writing, like all those things, I would write a script, I would take pictures, but the idea of kind of putting a crew together and making a movie was terrifying to me. My little brother was doing it with his friends in high school, but I literally could not do it. Like
that's
I was
a whole
terrified,
other ballgame,
you know?
Too. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just had no idea what I was doing. Didn't want to ask anybody for help. I kind of applied to film school. You know, my parents, of course, were like, "What are you going to do with your life? And you can't keep doing this for the rest of your life." And
typical parent
typical
questions.
Parents.
Yeah.
And they were also big supporters of education, traditional education. And so so for me, getting into graduate school, and especially a school like USC, which is one of the top film schools in the country, they were all kind of like, to them, that made sense. Being a starving artist in a warehouse somewhere didn't make sense to them either. But going to USC and doing a film program kind of made more sense to them. So so that kind of got me back to LA, which was basically my goal, was to get out of DC and like get into the film world again and kind of figure that out. And I spent 3 years doing my MFA there. I did a thesis film that I wrote and directed. I produced a bunch of thesis films while I was there. And it was amazing, and I kind of never really meant to leave. But life happens, and I got married, and my husband got a job with oil and gas, and we moved to New Orleans, and we had a baby, and a year later, Hurricane Katrina came through, and I became a Katrina refugee in Houston. So
that's okay. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Okay. So when you lived in New Orleans, did that provide any inspiration for any films, or what were you doing in New Orleans?
Yeah, well, I was mostly pregnant in New Orleans. And I, at the time, my thesis film was, I was applying to festivals and I was going back to LA because I had a screening there at the Directors Guild as part of the kind of USC first look thing. And I was trying to figure out what I was doing. And whether we were going to stay in New Orleans, whether my husband was going to stay with oil and gas, you know, it was all just kind of very new. And New Orleans was a really cool place to live. At the time, it was huge with production. I mean, it was kind of the place, and then it kind of died down, obviously, after Katrina and then came back. But so I really kind of thought, oh, well, you know, once I get this baby thing done and can work longer hours on my feet, I'll get into production work. But by that point, you know, the hurricane came. So so I did do a lot of writing while I was there and was really just kind of inspired by being in a different part of the world. I had never been down there before.
When you write, do you write with a feeling in mind or a story, or are you mentally already preparing yourself like, oh, I want to make this into a film? Do you write in film? Because I know as a writer, I either write as if I'm writing a diary or a novel or a script. Like I can already visualize my writing. What is your process like?
Yeah, it really depends, I guess, on where it's coming from. Sometimes it's just a lot of stream of consciousness, kind of journal writing, that I just have these ideas and I don't quite have a form for them. Other times it's like I have this idea for these characters and I want to make it a script, you know, I want to make it a film. And so then I kind of think about the script format and I think about what that needs. And ideas kind of come from all different kinds of places. So sometimes I'll have like characters or dialogue or an image. Like that's how a lot of this started, was, you know, I would write down photographs that I wanted to take kind of plot wise and I'll be making notes. It's kind of an ADD process. I don't know.
So as we mentioned earlier, so you write, you produce, you direct, and you also teach at Houston Community College. Where do you find the time to make a project like Acid Test?
Well, Acid Test was, it had been a few years since I had written and directed. And it had been a few years. So basically right now, I think I'm averaging about 5 years in between projects that I write and direct. And in between that time, I produce other people's work. What I wanted to do with Acid Test was to kind of shift towards only writing and directing and only doing my own work. I love supporting other people's films and helping those projects grow, which is why I love producing. And I've certainly met a lot of amazing people along the way. But I kind of feel like my work at Houston Community College now serves that impulse to develop and support and help future filmmakers. And so then kind of in my off time, I'd rather work on kind of my own voice and figure out that stuff. And the project that I had done, my thesis project at USC, was kind of a huge project for me. I mean, it was shot on 35 millimeter film, and I had to fundraise for it. And so it was kind of, it was a big thesis film. And then after I got to Houston, and I kind of was going through this huge identity crisis of, you know, who I was. I had had a baby in New Orleans. Then I had another baby here in Houston. And then my marriage started falling apart. And I was kind of like, I'm in the suburbs of this city that I don't even like. You know, I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I have this film degree that I can't do anything with because there aren't very many jobs. And I can't really work 18, 20-hour days on commercial work because I've got these two little babies because my husband is oil and gas, so he's traveling all the time. You know, it's just kind of, there were all these practical issues that made it kind of difficult. I had a great, I had built a great support network here in Houston and had started teaching at HCC. It was just before that. And so I was kind of like, well, you know, I had been making some films here already. I'd already been connected with the film community, and I had found some work that I could do, you know, full-time work that I could do from home that was flexible. And so I decided to stay in Houston, and just having that perspective shift, all of a sudden Houston became this kind of magical place where it was affordable to live and great to raise a family, and had, you know, yes, it didn't have a lot of film jobs, but it had enough stuff that you could kind of cobble together something really interesting. And all these people, this, you know, depth of talent that was here, there were all these different options. Now, the thing was, I had to have a day job and do all of these things and do the kid thing. And so that, for the last few years, was pretty insane. Like, trying to put together projects was really difficult.
Trying to juggle all of
that. And I did a film in between that time called Sisters, which was really my project with a bunch of friends for zero money that was kind of like, I don't even know if I like filmmaking anymore. This is just a big hassle. But I kind of fell in love with filmmaking all over again doing it. And so I thought, okay, well, I need to stick with this. And so in the last couple of years, I thought I need to now focus on kind of my own voice. I had had a short film that I produced, went to the Cannes Short Film Corner. So I went to the Cannes Film Festival in France.
Very cool.
And I was just like, you know what? I got to put up or shut up. You know, all these people, there's blood in the water. They are putting their lives at risk. You know, sure. I had a little bit of money saved up, and I was like, I need to just do something and kind of push this forward and stop kind of waiting for somebody to, you know, hand me money or waiting for permission, you know, or waiting to win some competition. I need to just go out and do it, you know? And so that's what I did. I had had this ridiculous story from my teenage years of dropping acid and going home to my parents and having them yell at me about it. And I thought this would make a really cool short film, and it lives within a larger story. So, you know, I'm hoping to adapt it to a feature film. And I just started, again, you know, tapping into that talent pool here and putting together Acid Test.
So Acid Test is about a teenage girl named Jenny who drops acid and experiences a hallucinogenic family meltdown. What was your process for the different effects? Because watching this, the camera work was so cool. I was very, you know, I hate to be like, oh, I was so impressed, you know, like as if I'm a film buff. But just watching it was so cool and it felt so real.
Awesome.
And I wondered what was motivated by what tripping actually feels like versus the visual effects that your team incorporated. Like, oh, this is what tripping should look like.
Right. It was a really interesting process. And one of the things that I was most concerned about the visual effects going into it, because I had never done a project with visual effects before and had zero technical capability. Like, a lot of the times as an independent filmmaker, you can be like a one-man band where it's like you do everything. You write, you direct, you produce, you edit, you sound design. You just kind of cobble it all together and do it yourself. But I knew that I probably wouldn't be able to do this story justice with that. And, the flip side of that is that if you rely too much on visual effects and you don't get your story right, then, you know, the ship sinks as well, you know? So I was kind of bouncing between these two things where I needed to make sure that the story and the concept and the acting and the places and all that stuff was rock solid. And then I also needed to make sure that the visual effects were kind of organic and worked well. So I started talking to people in Houston about, you know, well, what do you think, you know, what's possible? I don't even know what's possible for visual effects. And along the way, I met Sharad Patel, who is a one-man band, does all these amazing commercial work here in Houston. And what I found in him was somebody who could be the cinematographer and the editor and the visual effects and the, you know, he also did the color correction. So he did so much, and it became this kind of organic workflow where I didn't have to hand off to somebody else. We became creative partners through this process. And so we both had some experiences to bring to the table in terms of what things would look like. And we talked about the science of tripping and kind of what's going on with the eyes and the pupils. And maybe there would be light flares and maybe there would be color changes. And we talked a lot about kind of what are the different things that people actually see, and not just kind of have everything go all like woozy. We were trying to kind of think about what had already been done and what we liked about that and what we didn't like about it. And so we just had a dialogue about it. And then really once we got to the visual effects, I actually had very little kind of to do with that part, because it's like we had such a strong dialogue throughout the entire process and the editing process and shooting it and all this stuff, that by the time Sharad was doing the visual effects, it was kind of like, oh my God, that looks so cool. And that was it.
Yeah, like he totally got it.
And so, you know, we needed to make sure that it worked without the visual effects. So we had kind of a visual scheme with the lenses that we chose and the motion that we chose. And then we had one of my former students ended up kind of taking the reins on some of the trippy lighting aspects and just...
So you incorporated students in your...
Oh, film. Yeah. We had at least 10 students, former students of mine.
Wow, that's so cool.
And our sound designer was one of my first documentary students. He's this awesome sound designer, John Gale. He does the Rocket sound.
What a great experience.
Yeah, so it was, and Kristen was my second AD, and another student ended up being my script supervisor and our boom operator. And so, yeah, it was it was really great to be able to incorporate students and give them that opportunity to kind of work, because it was a big production. We had about 30, 35 crew members, and we had, you know, at times we had equipment and we had various locations. And so it was a fairly big production, and I really wanted it, again, to kind of be more of a career push. I kind of had very strict ideas of the quality that I wanted it, kind of the level that I wanted it to be right. at.
So you were pulling double duty, because not only were you doing something creative, you were also incorporating students and mentoring at the same time, which I know when I was a student, anybody who would even talk to me about what they did was great, was phenomenal. So to be able to have that hands-on experience, I'm sure was absolutely incredible. But, you know, it's like you look at a film, though, and you can't even tell that, you know, it would have been somebody's first time doing something as a student. This is such a cool project to be a part of, because it also incorporates like a very real family dynamic, you know, so it's not just like, oh, we made this cool indie film, you know, like short film. Like it has a very real family feel to it, and not like, oh, you know, take your kids to the movie sort of feel. But that just that dynamic that you have, like when you get in a fight with your dad or your dad starts raising his voice and he's trying to be really stern and you're like a teenager and angsty and yeah, that it really came across so beautifully. Okay, and so what you said earlier, so this was an autobiographical project for you.
Yeah, it started out, and I mean, in my mind, it kind of follows what I remember of what happened, and kind of the feeling of what happened. But it is not strictly officially autobiographical in the sense that, you know, I think my dad at the time was at a hockey game with my brother and only came back later. So like the family dinner scene, that was just kind of pulled from other family dinner scenes, you know, family dinners we had had in my family. And so it was based on kind of my family and kind of the absurd things that have happened. And it was really scary for me to start, you know, to write something that was really just taken from true life for me. I was worried about representing my family and kind of putting that out there. It felt very personal. And then it's also always one of those interesting things when you put something personal out there where you feel like, well, you know, now I'm going to be judged for like who I am based on what I think is important that I'm putting out there, you know? And
sure.
So it was an interesting process because a lot of people would read it and would say things like, oh, well, Jenny's just a brat. Like, she's just a teenage brat and, you know, she's annoying, you know? Or, oh my God, the dad is like really abusive and this is horrible. And there were kind of just all these varying things. And because it was based on real people, it was kind of like, oh my God, you know, like, you know, there was a little bit of nervousness, yeah, you know, about that. But as it kind of became this collaborative thing, and, you know, it took us a year and a half to finish it. So it really went through many stages where by the end of it, and even early on, once I started, especially once I cast it, it couldn't be like, oh, well, this is what I would do as Jenny. Like, I saw that a lot sometimes from my actors, like, oh, well, but tell me what your family was really like. And I'm like, okay, well, I can tell you what my family was really like, but we also have to serve this short story in this small amount of time within a narrative kind of context and structure. And so a lot of things, the quirks of real life, we want to kind of capture those, but we also don't want to derail the narrative story. You know, it kind of needs to have a certain structure to it and a certain sense to it. And you can kind of get into a black hole once you start talking about people's backgrounds and all this stuff that's kind of going into it. It becomes kind of too theoretical, too psychological. And so I was really interested in being like, okay, well, this is what I'm going for, but I want to make sure that that feels natural to you as an actor and kind of your understanding of this character. And so it really stopped being me and my story and my parents, and it really became kind of something that we all did together. And to me, that's the most exciting part of filmmaking, is that collaborative aspect.
An organic feel.
Yeah.
For sure. So what went into finding these actors? What were you looking for when you were casting for this film?
Well, I was originally worried about casting Jenny, because I, especially with a teenage role or any kind of child kid role, you have that conflict of, do you want to hire somebody who's actually the age of the character, which was originally 15, because I was 15 at the time. And so, you know, and you can find some amazing 15-year-old actors, but it's harder. Oftentimes what you see in movies is people cast who might look 15, but they're actually like 18 or 20, you know, or things like that.
Usually, yeah, in their mid-20s. Yeah. You see a lot of high schoolers played by 20-year-olds.
Right, sure. Exactly. So, and what they bring is a little bit more life experience and a little bit more technique. You know, they've studied a bit longer. They've kind of had more experience as actors. And so they can kind of bring a little bit more maturity and depth, and not just to the character and the role they're playing, but also in the relationship with the directors and being on set and all of that stuff. But then if you hire somebody too old, then it kind of feels less natural. And so we were kind of bouncing around, and I was really worried about it. But there was something about Juliana DeStefano, who sent in a tape, because she's now living in Los Angeles, even though she's originally from the Bel Air area here in Houston. And I watched her tape, and I was like, oh my God. I texted my producer. I was like, I think I'm in love. I don't know. There's just something about her that I want to watch her. I like what she's doing. She was like 19 or 20 at the time, and she was just really game for it. We saw a lot of really good reads and a lot of really interesting roles, but it was kind of pretty clear to me once I saw Juliana's tape that she, I don't know, there was just something about her that I was gravitating towards. It ended up being much harder to cast the father role, which I had originally intended to just cast a local actor that was here in Houston, because I was trying to keep the budget down and not fly in actors from all over the place. And again, we saw a lot of fine actors who gave interesting reads, but I was looking for something that bridged a bunch of different kind of personality choices. And so it was hard for me to find somebody that was clicking with what I thought of as the character. And so my producer had worked with Patrick Sane, who again had lived in Houston for many years, but was now in Los Angeles because he had had some success with Breaking Bad and Sin City 2 and all this. And he said something like, oh, Patrick's a sweetheart. Like, you'll love him. He's awesome. And I looked up, I Googled his name, and I looked up his picture, and he looks like a psycho killer, like all of his pictures. And I was like, this is a sweetheart? Like, what are you talking about? He's going to murder us. Like, this is, you know. But I found that kind of contradiction exactly what I was looking for. I wanted a dad who could be both insane and scary and also lovable and funny and somebody that you kind of can't let go of, you know? And so I called Patrick, and we had like this amazing conversation over the phone, and he read the script and really liked it. And I don't know, it just kind of went from there. And he just kind of became everything that I was looking for in that character. And then, you know, the rest just kind of fell into place. And the mom, Mia Ruiz, is a local film actress here in Houston. That was also an interesting change because my mom is an immigrant, and that was an important thing for me to continue in the adaptation.
So that was one of my questions, because she... is Juliana Hispanic?
She's not. I think she's like Italian.
Italian?
Yeah.
But she kind of had that...
coloring, like, yeah.
Well, and also the when she would speak to her mom, I think,
yes,
yeah. So they would kind of speak Spanish. So that was a question of mine. Was that a conscious decision to make them?
Yes,
to make her mom ethnic.
Yes, because my mom is from the Czech Republic. So for me, what was interesting, or what I wanted to capture with kind of the role of the immigrant, was somebody, because I kind of feel like, I mean, drugs are everywhere, obviously, and kids are doing drugs in all different kinds of places. But when I was going through this experience, my mom had been around it and seen it. You know, she was a child of the 60s, but for her, drugs terrified her. It was just kind of like, that is scary. I don't want anybody to do it. I don't want to touch it, you know. And so it's, I kind of was looking at it as like, this is a more typical American teenager experience, and I wanted one of the parents to kind of be afraid of it, and the mom, not just one of the parents, but the mom character, to be afraid of it, but also to be this kind of unconditional love or unconditional support. Because again, that the scene in the bed, like, my mom did crawl into bed with me, and it was kind of one of those things where I know that she was probably mad at me. I mean, to this day, she's like, I wanted to throttle you. You know, I mean, I know she was mad and terrified, you know, like, yeah, that I was going to die or that I needed to go to the hospital. But she was also just kind of there for me, no questions asked. And so
As a mom does,
you know? And so I kind of felt like having that kind of immigrant layer gave you, you know, not just this kind of, oh, well, she's a mom and of course she's going to do that, but this is like, this is foreign to her. You know, I wanted to kind of preserve that as this kind of based on autobiographical stuff. And so we, again, we're casting, and I tend to try and do casting calls fairly blind because I love the collaborative aspect. I'm willing to kind of bend and change and move things for people that I find interesting to work with and who bring something to the table. And so, you know, to me, it didn't have to be somebody from Eastern Europe. You know, it could have been, you know, anybody who had kind of a strong cultural thing that was not kind of American. Right. And so Mia is from here, but she is of Mexican, you know, heritage. And so she, I just loved her audition. And she also... you know, I kind of did this thing where I was kind of putting the headshots together to kind of see who would reasonably look like a family. Because that's a pet peeve of mine is when you see these families on television and they don't look at all like genetically related. Yeah. And I'm kind of like, oh, God, you know. And it was, and it's interesting too, because when I premiered at Literally Short Film Festival, we were talking about the film and, you know, the people who run Literally Short Film Festival are, you know, originally from Mexico. And we were talking about this kind of drug aspect. And, you know, obviously the drugs and the cartel is a very frightening and very real thing. And so that just kind of, again, played into or worked well with this aspect of what I wanted from a mom who was kind of terrified of what's going on, but just kind of there for her daughter regardless. So that was very conscious. And then it was kind of like, okay, well, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know, I'm not Mexican, you know, I don't know what goes into this. So can we collaborate and make this feel real and organic in a way that somebody would recognize? And my production designer, Jessica Flores, is, you know, also of Mexican descent. And so she brought a lot of things from her family. And, you know, I worked with Mia and we talked about it. And then Mia and Juliana kind of had this kind of mother-daughter thing. And Juliana would be like, oh, well, you know, can I respond to you like this? Because I've heard my friends say that to their moms, you know, and so it just kind of went that way.
But yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. What happened in the film was, you know, she gets taken to this concert. She asks if she can, you know, spend the night or if she can spend the night, but she's already taken acid. She's already dropped acid at this point. So mm-hmm. I don't want to give away too much because I do want people to keep a lookout for it because it is going to start making the rounds on the festival circuit and hopefully nationwide. Yes. So fingers crossed.
And eventually, I mean, basically the life of people are often surprised with short films. They have about a 2-year window for festivals. So we've just started the festival submission process. So really we have up to 2 years to play in various festivals, around the US and even internationally. And then after that, you can also distribute on their various platforms. We did a crowdfunding campaign for post-production funds through Seed and Spark, and they are now a distribution platform as well where you can stream your projects there. And then there are also various streaming platforms to get the films out there.
Are you motivated by being a female director? Because I there aren't a lot of females out there doing this. It's a very male-dominated industry.
It's, you know, it's one of those things where it's a very male-dominated industry, but there are a lot of women making films. And even in film festivals, I read some statistics where most film festivals are about... There is about a 50% representation.
Well, that's good.
Okay. The problem is that the jobs that come out of that.
Sure.
You know, if you make a splash at Sundance with your short film as a typically white male, you know, filmmaker, you might have the chance of directing the next Jurassic Park, you know, or something like that.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, a woman filmmaker or a person of color, you know, there's less of that kind of... not that anything, I mean, obviously it's a hard business and there are no guarantees, but it is just, I mean, the hiring practices are, I mean, illegal and abysmal. I mean, no other corporation could get away with what the industry gets away with in terms of hiring practices. And so it's one of those things where as a writer director, kind of like any artist, it's like I'm motivated by what inspires me or the stories that I want to tell, and that's kind of, I guess, unique to me, just like any other artist's voice is unique to them. But I also, you know, want to represent and again, support and change an industry that is just, you know, focused on telling one kind of story. And you're seeing a lot of change out there. I mean, there's a lot more that's coming out, and that's really exciting. And especially with all the various platforms that people have on the internet to watch different kind of content, it's exciting to be able to produce content that has kind of a different kind of story and a different kind of voice. At the same time, I kind of view that as a slightly separate issue than hiring practices, because, you know, on some level, it is an art, but it is an art, but it's also a business, you know? So it's kind of like, sure, when television executives tell my friends, like, oh, well, we've already hired our female director for the season. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, you know.
Does it matter?
It doesn't matter. Right. You know, it's like out of 13 or 8 episodes or 20 episodes, you hire one. Like, give me a break.
Yeah, they're
know?
Like, we filled our quota. Thanks.
Exactly, exactly. Whatever. So it's, that to me is just, like many things, you know, just ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's disappointing. So now that Acid Test is out there, it's a phenomenal short film. You said you want to hopefully expand on that and make it a feature-length film. What's next now? Now that it's out there, you're hoping to get into some festivals. Do you just play a waiting game, or are you proactive, or are you working on another project?
Seed and Spark, who we did our crowdfunding campaign, they just partnered with the Duplass brothers, Mark and Jay Duplass, who went to UT for a film and, you know, have done these great films. And so they're doing this campaign initiative called Hometown Heroes.
Yeah, where they're giving away money.
They're giving away money, yeah. And they're going to executive produce, you know, the films that they pick. And
that is so cool.
And I was kind of looking at it, and I was like, well, you know, I'm not sure I'm ready. I've got a terrible first draft of a feature-length Acid Test. And I was like, why am I talking myself out of this? Like, why not just
do it?
Do it!
Right.
You know, why not just try? And so all this last week, I've been kind of putting together my campaign materials to fundraise basically the development process of this script. And one of the things, I've got a lot of friends in theater, and one of the things that one of my best friends, who's an actress, does in New York is she does these table reads or these kind of workshop weekends with different plays and stuff. And I thought that's a really great, and we have some of that here in Houston. Molly Vernon and Michelle Robinson here in Houston, they do these table reads. And I thought this is a great way to workshop a script. And so you have to fundraise. You have to do a crowdfunding campaign. And so it's, I started kind of budgeting things out because I was like, well, you know, I hate asking for money, A, and B, especially for just the kind of development phase. But I thought for this, you know, Hometown Heroes, like, let's just showcase Texas. I mean, Houston alone has a variety of landscapes that, sure, you know, to showcase.
Yeah.
But Texas at large, I mean, it's crazy. And I haven't seen half of it. So, you know, I kind of thought to hire all these actors to come in, do a table read, weekend workshop, and to kind of explore the various places to kind of showcase Texas landscape in the film, that comes up to $7,800 with also putting together a hiring my AD again for a couple of days to work on a schedule, sure, and get a script consultant and all this stuff. So it basically meets the $7,500 requirement and really gets the script to a point where we could then move it into production, regardless of whether we get the Duplass brothers or not, which, although that would be amazing if we did. But so basically, you crowdfund for at least $7,500, you get over 500 followers. And so that's one of the things I love about Seed and Spark, is that people can follow it like they would follow your Facebook page or follow you on Twitter for free. Like, you don't have to do anything other than sign up at Seed and Spark. And so, you know, the top 10 people with the most followers who also raise over $7,500 get a chance to pitch the feature film to the Duplass brothers, and then they will pick five and give each one up to $25,000 and an executive production producer credit for them. And that kind of could help, you know, spear this project. And I've never done a feature film. Kind of that's, I guess, the next step.
Yeah, the next is to
direct
growing.
A feature film. And so I'm just gonna go for it and try, you know, and put it together.
Where can people go to follow? Can people, like me, can I just go sign up and follow the film?
Yes, you can sign up and follow. It's not gonna go live until mid-September. So, okay. So right now, you know, just, you know, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Jenny Waldo, and Acid Test also has a website and Twitter and Facebook. And so we'll be posting it there. And you can follow the short film Acid Test. If you go to Seed and Spark and type in Acid Test, the short film campaign will be there. And then if you follow that, because I'm still posting updates through there, you'll get all the information as well.
Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
You would be our hometown hero, hopefully. If you get selected to do this, this is an incredible opportunity, not just for you, but for the city.
Exactly.
As well, for
yeah.
Houston. So I like to end my show by asking all of my guests the same question. What is currently inspiring you right now?
I've been really inspired, especially lately, with what Jill Soloway does with Transparent and I Love Dick. And kind of that, again, that when I saw Jill speak at South by Southwest, and just talking about, again, that kind of organic, collaborative nature, or even the filmmaker Mike Lee in England, he does everything kind of from this improvisational style where he kind of builds his scripts. And that's kind of what I'm interested in doing right now. I'm really inspired by this collaborative process and connecting with other people. And just kind of sharing stories. And to me, I love connecting with people and seeing what other people are doing, what they're excited about. And that to me is inspiring, is to see other people, like, you know, what you're doing here, or, you know, going off to graduate school. You know,
it's really
exciting to me to see that with, you know, in other people kind of pursuing these things, because it's hard and it's scary and it's and I am, you know, I kind of take inspiration from other people pursuing their dreams too.
So. Well, you're an inspiration for us all. You're doing it all. You're a mom, you're a director, you're making these badass films, you teach for HCC, and I'm so happy to know you. I'm so happy that we connected through Kristen.
Yes.
Our friend Kristen Massa, who's also a very incredible, inspiring woman.
Yes,
in
definitely.
Her own right.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, or can people reach out to you? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I have a website, jennywaldo.com, and again, Facebook and Twitter. You know, people can connect with me. I'm always, I'm always interested in connecting with other people and collaborating with people. And hopefully, one of the things we didn't talk about was, you know, through the Acid Test, I got connected with this band, Giant Kitty, and we've been working on music
yes!
videos.
Oh my gosh.
And
yeah.
So, you know, hopefully we'll be having, we already shot one, is already ready, and we're kind of working on another one for their second album.
Giant Kitty is this badass local punk band that I just absolutely love. Miriam is a good friend. And
yeah.
She's another incredible, inspiring woman that it warms my heart to see all of these people that I know just doing great things in the community.
It is really exciting, and it's just really, I don't know, it's just amazing to be able to work with people like that and to kind of bounce ideas off around and stay current and stay, try and pass on what I know, but I'm always learning things from my students, or they're introducing me to other stuff that I had never seen or never heard of. So to me, that's just kind of what I want to do in life, is just to keep learning and connecting. So
that's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jenny, for joining us. Everybody, Jenny Waldo, please keep an eye out for her. Follow her if you can. Acid Test is a phenomenal film, and I'm really excited to see where it goes, because it would be a triumph for you, for the city, and for artists in our community, honestly. It's a really great short film. So thank you so much for joining us. If you would like to find us on Facebook, we're on Facebook, The Gallery Podcast. We're also on Instagram. You can follow us there at The Gallery Podcast. And if you have an artist or somebody that you'd like to refer, you can email me at thegallerypodcast@gmail.com, and I would be happy to interview them. So thank you so much for tuning in, guys. Bye.
Bye.